Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Before we get started today, listeners, I'm going to take a punt and say that it's likely that some of you are gentlemen of a certain age and you've spent slash wasted several hours of your life playing Football Manager down the years. But if you wanted to get better at the game, you can join our very own Ian McIntosh, author of the world famous Football Manager Stole My Life, on Tuesday the 25th of May for the Ultimate Football Manager Masterclass. Sports Interactive's Tom Davidson will deliver a top-level briefing on the secrets of FM21, and then former Rangers, Aston Villa and Birmingham manager Alec McLeish will pass on some real-life lessons from his nearly 25 years in real-life management. There are top prizes to be won too, including the opportunity to take on McLeish in a live-streamed winner-takes-all game of FM21. The event is all online and you can get your ticket for only £7 right now over at link.dice.fm/masterclass. That's really catchy, so we'll do it one more time. link.dice.fm/masterclass.
Totally Football Show, Continental Edition. It's called Europe and it is the final countdown. 1 week to go. Ein goal for Lewandowski to break the record. Un point between Lille and PSG. Uno partido between Atleti and the title. And in Italy, una vecchia signora that hasn't quite given up the ghost. We've got all of that news, plus titles in Turkey and Portugal and more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Here we are with another Totally Football Show, which you may or may not be listening to on Tuesday the 18th of May, some point after that anyway, at the start of what is the final week of the season around Europe. I say we, of course, it's the classic lineup. James Horncastle.
Hello, James.
Julien Laurent.
Bonjour.
Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
And Alvaro Romeo.
Hello, James.
My word, it's remarkable to get to this late in the season and still have so much to play for. Titles in two of your leagues and big stuff pretty much everywhere, except maybe the Bundesliga, but that Lewandowski goal is quite interesting. It's exciting.
Yeah, I think all around Europe as well. You look at Sporting winning the Liga Nosh, Rangers in Scotland as well, possibly Lille, Jules in Liga still, Atleti in La Liga. So it does feel like it's a really disrupted season, really.
All right. And right down to the wire, indeed. All right. Well, we're going to talk about all that stuff, your Sportings, or the various big themes of this footballing weekend. But let's begin, of course, with our favourite moments with Paddy Power. James.
James, we're going to check into a hotel in Milan on Sunday. Not just you me. This is completely metaphorical. And the Cagliari players are there and they're watching Crotone play Benevento. Crotone already relegated, nothing to play for, and yet they get a point against Benevento, which means that Cagliari stay up. So Cagliari, they're playing against Milan that night and they crack open the beers. They have a few, they celebrate, they toast and everything. And everyone thinks that Milan are going to qualify for the Champions League because all they have to do is beat this Cagliari team that's already on the beach, and there are a few better beaches than the ones in Sardinia. And yet Cagliari show up. They could have won the game. It's 0-0, which means that we go into the final weekend of the season with, what, three teams vying for a Champions League place. Napoli, Juventus, and of course Milan, who go to Atalanta in Bergamo next weekend.
Right, and they got a brilliant record in their recent trips there.
Indeed, they lost 5-0.
last season. They got beaten by Atalanta this season 3-0 as well, didn't they, San Siro? Anyway, we'll talk about that incredible three-way battle for the last two Champions League spots in Italy. But in France, Jules, what's your moment of the weekend?
Check yourself in a hotel in Lille, right? We're Sunday night. We're in...
This now sounds like Alan Partridge. Mm-hmm. Check into a hotel.
Not just now, James. Not just now.
Yeah, dismantle your Corby trouser press.
All season.
Jules, do ignore them and tell us about
Lille. No, more seriously. 90th minute in the Lille-Saint-Etienne game is still 0-0.
Right.
In a game that Lille can afford not to win, to lose, but not to win certainly, although a win will take them even closer to the title, the first one in 10 years. And Yazici's free kick is pushed on the post by the young Saint-Etienne goalkeeper, Etienne Green. You remember that famous story where Green... Mm. Who was born in England with an English father, now plays for Les Verts, the Greens in Saint-Etienne, and saved his team and also saved the hopes of PSG for just another week, because right now there's just a point between Lille and PSG.
It's incredibly tight, isn't it? And him playing for Saint-Etienne, it'd be like someone called Gunnar Arsenal playing for Arsenal. It's the same kind of thing. All right, looking forward to exploring that in more detail later on. Rafa?
Well, in other nominative determinism news, Robert Lewandowski also scored, James. Wow. He added his 40th of the season, which of course equals the eternal record, or what we all thought would be the eternal record, of Gerd Müller from 71-72. It was an unspectacular goal, it has to be said. It came from the penalty spot, but the celebrations were quite nice. The Bayern players and staff gave him a guard of honour during the game. I'm not sure the Freiburg player were that happy, but it was such a historic moment with also Lewandowski showing a dedication to Gerd Müller on his T-shirt afterwards that it felt apt for the moment. And of course, next week he's got a chance to actually beat the record.
Mm. Alvaro, what about you?
Well, it was a beautiful day in La Liga, and my moment of the week has to be Luis Suarez scoring a goal against Osasuna in the 88th minute against the Rojillos that put Atletico back on top. Now they depend on themselves to win the title in the last day of the competition, and well, it was brilliant because for 19 minutes Real Madrid topped the table provisionally until Luis Suarez scored that goal.
Right, Luis Suarez, who's moved from Barcelona to Atletico Madrid, might be the key factor in this year's title race. Barcelona without him, his old club blowing up once again this weekend. They're now definitively out of the title picture. We'll talk about all of that soon enough. But let's begin, Jules, with the Ligue 1 title race that's looking as lit as a French livre.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend. Brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4-plus fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
Jules, Ligue 1, week to go, and 1 point between Lille and Paris Saint-Germain. As you mentioned at the top, it was right there for Lille last weekend. So what happened?
I think they got a bit nervous, James, clearly. This is still a team that is very inexperienced, really, when you look at some of the young players in there. Others, like José Font or Burak Yılmaz, have experience. But I think the occasion got to them. A win could have crowned the champions had PSG not beaten Reims, which very early on looked very unlikely anyway.
Right.
Because Reims went down to 10 men and PSG were very early on in the lead. But still, we expected at least Lille to get 3 points and then get even closer to just 1 point of the title, which they didn't. They didn't create anything. Even Galtier after the game said they were unrecognizable. This was not my team. Only towards the end with that Yazici free kick and then the Burak Yılmaz hit on the rebound, they came quite close to score. But it was a very disappointing performance where I think really the nerves got to them. They still have another chance next week, and if they win at Angers, then they will be champions anyway, right, regardless of the PSG results. But it was still a bit disappointed, I thought, considering they could have been crowned champions on Sunday night.
Absolutely. All right, so 1 point now. They're at Angers, as you say. They must at least match Paris Saint-Germain's result. The PSG are going to be at Brest, who are one of five teams battling the drop on the final day. They've got Kylian Mbappe, though, back for PSG, and were looking in fantastic form against Reims.
They were very good. It helped that Reims went down to 10, as we said, very early on after 15 minutes. But still, there was a lot of fun in the way PSG were playing. They easily should have scored 10 goals. They missed a few, and there was a few good saves by the keeper. But it was very positive. It's a shame that they didn't do that a bit more in the 8 games that they lost so far this season. But at least they put themselves still with a chance of winning it and hoping that Angers, where PSG struggled to win earlier in the season, for example. Angers, we've got nothing to play for, but almost got a point from Marseille on Sunday night as well. That they can just get a point, just get a draw against Lille, and if PSG win against Brest, then they will be champions.
But equally, Lille hoping that Brest are going to pull something out of this game with PSG. Brest, who are one of a whole gaggle of teams separated by only a couple of points, who risk, with a defeat, ending up in the playoff, the relegation playoff position. Have Lille blown it, do you think, Jules? Have they?
I don't think so. I just think there's two things. One is that the all week, the build-up towards their game at Angers would be on, oh, they've missed this big opportunity, now PSG are there. Pochettino, I thought, rightly so, on Sunday, said, you know, my team has more experience of those kind of games where there's so much at stake than the Lille team, which is true, and same for Galtier as well, as a manager who's never really been in that position. So the pressure is going to build massively from now on to Sunday night, where every day we're going to say to Lille players, are you going to do it or are you going to blow it? So it's a huge game and it's a huge week for them.
So the pressure on Lille and the pressure on Paris Saint-Germain as well, but of course they're used to that. They don't have any problems dealing with pressure. They do have a huge game before we even get to the final round of the championship, and that is on Wednesday night when they play Monaco in the Coupe de France. Jules?
That's right, James. The Stade de France is a bit weird, like we had it in England, for example, or even in Germany, that the last game of the season is not the cup final, which is usually the way domestically. And it's a bit of a shame, especially when it's sandwiched between two huge games in the league for both teams, because Monaco want to keep their third place and Lyon are only a point behind. So Lyon will be able to rest all week when Monaco and PSG play Wednesday and then on Sunday at the weekend. It's a big game for Monaco as well, who beat Rennes on Sunday night and playing well in the first half, struggling in the second half, but grinding out the result, which was really good for them. But it's a huge cup final when you know that Monaco have beaten PSG twice already this season in the league, in the two games they played, and very convincingly at the Parc des Princes as well. So big game, and for PSG, the risk of having a blank season where you don't win anything.
With Pochettino coming in midway through the season, how much would that count against him?
I think it would be disappointing to have not the cup or not the league title at the end of the season for Pochettino and for the players. It's just, it's one of those. Carlo Ancelotti arrived in Paris in January 2012. They were top of the table. They were being top at Christmas and they finished second. 6 months later, he lost the league. This time Pochettino arrived and they were second and they might still finish second. It's hard to tell. It doesn't mean that he's a bad manager. He will certainly be there next season. I don't think that will add any pressure to his job or anything like that already. But it would be much better for him if in the next week, or like 7 days, he does the domestic double for sure.
Get something, yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to be a really interesting week. Almost as tight as Ligue 1 is La Liga, which we're going to be hearing about very shortly. Next up, though, we're going to drop in on our friends in the Bundesliga.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Rechts am Strafraum, Holland zu Brandt, Julian Brandt am Torwart vorbei und Julian Brandt trifft zum 3:0 für Borussia Dortmund in der 80. Minute. Und damit macht den Deckel drauf auf dieses Spiel.
Rafa, what a week in Germany. What a week for Borussia Dortmund. Victory in the Pokal. And then this weekend, the win at Mainz to seal a top four spot.
Yeah, huge week for them. Huge couple of results. The cup, their first trophy since 2017 when Thomas Tuchel played his last game at Dortmund as a coach. And you could see how much it meant to them. There were wild celebrations. Lukas Piszczek was in tears. It was his farewell after years of stellar service there. And a real sense of togetherness. That this club has had a difficult season with Lucien Favre and all these things, having a good ending to it. And of course, finishing fourth, which is now guaranteed after beating Mainz and Frankfurt slipping up against Schalke, was so, so important. I think it wouldn't necessarily have been the case that they would have had to sell lots of players but it's much, much easier to sell this project and to keep everybody happy when you're in the Champions League. And of course, the financial implications are quite serious as well, especially in Corona times. So yeah, absolutely huge week. Quite ironic that Schalke of all teams helped them in their quest for a top four finish. And of course, with Mainz, and there's a bit of a special relationship with Mainz because of the Klopp and Tuchel past at that club. It helped them that Mainz actually were safe before going into the game. Like Crotone, they were watching Augsburg's game against Hoffenheim on television on Saturday, saw that Augsburg won to save themselves and to effectively save Mainz as well, and they partied quite wildly, and I think maybe one or two players might have still been slightly feeling the after effects of that party on Sunday afternoon, and helped Dortmund put another really convincing performance, with Marco Reus in particular playing really, really well.
Okay, Dortmund presumably have been doing a little bit of partying themselves after Thursday night's Pokal victory over RB Leipzig. A very convincing win, 4-1, a brace for Sancho, a brace for Haaland. Brilliant from them. Is there any kind of slight trepidation from Bayern Munich at the way Nagelsmann's results are going at the moment with Leipzig? I think they're winless now since the announcement of the move.
I think it would have been easier for Nagelsmann to arrive there as a winner, having won his first trophy, as far as the stature is concerned. But there's enough goodwill inside the Bayern team, players who've worked with him, like Serge Gnabry, who really credits Nagelsmann for changing his career when he worked with him at Hoffenheim. There's Niklas Süle as well. Nagelsmann, it would have been easier for him, I think, in Munich with that trophy in tow. But at the same time, there's enough, I think, goodwill towards him in the dressing room to make it a relatively smooth transition in any case. But yeah, I mean, if you will, there is a pattern, and this is something we talked about on the Starcast pod this week, of these sort of lame duck coaches kind of running out of steam towards the end of their tenure. The same happened to Adi Hütter, the same happened to Marco Rose, of course. Is it, you know, more than a coincidence? It's tough to say. But Terzic, who himself, of course, will not be the coach at the end of the season any longer. There's still a big question whether he'll become an assistant coach once more and work under Rose, or actually go and be the first team coach somewhere else because he's done so well. That didn't have the same effect. So maybe it's not that easy to generalize in this specific case.
Okay. What would you put Frankfurt's collapse down to? They were 7 points clear of Dortmund with seven games to go. Dortmund put together a brilliant run. What is it? Six straight victories. But Frankfurt equally have folded.
Yeah, you can say it's Adi Hütter leaving, it's Freddy Bobic leaving, it's Bruno Hübner leaving, you know, two of the sporting directors above Hütter have been very, very influential at the club. There's also talk of, you know, the big players leaving. I think Kostic, Frankfurt will do really well to hold on to him. Andre Silva has a lot of people interested in him because he's had a great season and he's technically such a good striker. I'm not surprised that Manchester City have been linked with him because he is, I think, tailor-made for this team. Perhaps not an out-and-out superstar, but somebody I think who would really, really work in that setup. So you have that sense of that club falling, if not apart a little bit, but perhaps having to rebuild itself under new management from top to bottom. At the same time, you can just say, look, Frankfurt finishing fifth or sixth is a tremendous achievement, because nobody really, I think, thought this season that they would be able to finish in Europa League places again. Yes, fourth would have been amazing, but have they done so worse now that they miss out by a place or two? I'm not sure you can really say that. So they're more or less where they should be and perhaps have even overachieved.
Okay. Wolfsburg are back in the Champions League for the first time in 6 years. Two other big talking points to be resolved on the last day and beyond. One is relegation, where once again this season Werder Bremen risk going down after 40 years in the top division. It's Arminia, I always pronounce this wrong, Rafa, but indulge me, Bielefeld on 32 points, Werder Bremen on 31, and then Cologne on 30. One will be safe, one goes into a playoff and one goes down with the Schalke. So that's going to be pretty tense. And then the other question is whether Lewandowski can break the record. So 2-2 against Freiburg last weekend. He got a penalty to level it, and then he got the game stopped, or at least they stopped the game for him and gave him the guard of honour, and he shows his T-shirt and that. Then he had an absolute sitter to take the record, Rafa.
Yeah, it was Choupo-Moting-esque, really, that miss. He was on the line and it bounced off his thigh into the arms of the goalkeeper, who just couldn't quite believe his luck. I mean, there were people saying, you know, this is maybe a nice thing. Maybe it's good for the romance if he can't break Gerd Müller's record, if it's just if it's just both of them finishing on equal terms. But there's one more thing that needs to be decided, apart from that, by the way, and that is, can Union Berlin hold on to the Europa Conference League place?
Ah.
Which really would be an unbelievable achievement in their second ever Bundesliga season. To finish seventh and to have European football at Alte Försterei is an amazing story, and they're very close to doing it.
Brilliant. All right. Well, as for the Lewandowski record attempt, that'll come down to the game at home to Augsburg next Saturday, which will also be, of course, Bayern's final game for now under the tutelage of Hansi Flick. One of a series of goodbyes that we'll be seeing this weekend across Europe. Anyway, something's ending, some new beginnings as well. Next up, let's talk Turkey.
Harry, is there any truth in the rumours that you're off to Spain in the summer?
Sorry, me no hablo inglés.
What about one of the Manchester clubs?
Well,
Harry, what about my source who says you're keen to stay at Spurs?
Can we keep the question sensible, please?
Kane's future at Spurs remains uncertain, but you're guaranteed to get money back as a free bet if one leg of your fourfold acca lets you down. Paddy Power.
Max free bet £10, min odds 1 to 5 on each leg. Online exclusive, exclude shop bets and enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Besiktas are the new champions of the Super League, and it was so tight. Oh my goodness. They ended up pipping Galatasaray on goal difference and one goal on the final day. Fenerbahce end up third. They miss out on the Champions League. And Besiktas can now go for the double because they're going to be playing Antalyaspor in the Turkish Cup final on Tuesday. As for Man United's friends, Başakşehir, who you may recall won the title last year but then were down in the relegation zone, they ended up 12th. Last weekend also saw the title decided in Portugal, Sporting ending a 19-year wait, 19 years of watching Porto and Benfica trading the title between them. We're joined now by the executive editor of Record, David Novo. David, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for the invitation. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's a historic moment after this long, long wait for Sporting. They weren't really cast as favourites at the start of this season, and they've had an incredible campaign. What has made them this incredible runaway success story this year?
Well, the secrets, the explanation, it's I think in the beginning of the season, I think that there was a factor that was really important. Sporting was in the Europa League qualifiers. They lost against the Las Clins, and they stuck to the domestic competitions, the championship mostly, and of course the cups, and they had more time between games, and I think that of course that helped. But the biggest secret, of course, is Ruben Amorim, of course, the coach. Made a really good job assembling a squad that has a really a lot of young players, talented players, and of course when we see games after games, we saw Sporting winning, scoring goals, suffering not that many goals. Of course, good players, experienced players between the younger players. We had a goalkeeper, Adan, a Spanish goalkeeper, played in the Real Madrid, Athletic Madrid. Sebastián Coates made, without a doubt, his best season in Portugal, the captain, Sebastián Coates. João Palhinha, also, for me, one of the best players of the championship, not only in Sporting, but also one of the best players of the championship. Pedro Gonçalves, goal scorer, the offensive midfielder, has 20 goals in the championship. It's a lot for a midfielder. Other players, Nuno Mendes, of course, left back, I think one of the best also. And a team with unity, with the players that helped each other. And of course, with the good results, things got even better. And they managed to get until the end. They lost Saturday against Benfica, the first defeat of the season. They lost 4-3. Really good game against the rival. But the most important thing was already done. To win the championship 19 years after, it's a really huge achievement. And of course, I think it's good for the Portuguese football to have again Sporting in the fight for the title, so that we can have three big clubs fighting until the end to the championship.
Absolutely. The extraordinary thing is that it comes in what is only Ruben Amorim's second season as a manager. He's, what, 36 years of age? No doubt people are calling him special.
Yes. He started, a lower team. He went to the secondary team of Braga. And then I think in January last year, he went to the first team of Braga. And then only 2 months in March, he was signing for Sporting. You may recall the 10 million euro, one of the most expensive coaches in the world, for a coach that had just a few months of experience. So it was a risk.
That's what they had to pay to Braga to get him.
Yeah, yes, yes. For a coach that had a few months. So, of course, there was a risk. But Sporting trusted in Ruben Amorim, mainly not only the president, of course, but because all in any club the president has the last word. But as you may know, that Sporting's Sporting director Hugo Viana, that played in Newcastle, he is really close to Ruben Amorim. They are from the same generation. They know really, really well. And it was an idea from mostly from Hugo Viana, of course, with the agreement of the president. And they risk, it was a risk, of course, to spend that money in a coach that hadn't that experience. But well, we are seeing that it was it's a good decision. They won also the Taça da Liga, League Cup. They won the championship, and of course, they made a season where players developed. And of course, I believe it's going to be a summer a little bit busy for Sporting in terms of sales. I believe Nuno Mendes, João Palhinha, and other players that may leave because they played really well this season.
That's, I mean, the classic thing with any Portuguese success, I guess, is it something that can last, or is this team going to be broken up? But Amorim and, to some extent, the bulk of this team are going to be there next year, you think?
Well, of course, Sporting wants to keep the players, but I'll give you the example of João Palhinha. João Palhinha almost left in the last summer. There were some offers from Russia that he didn't like. I think that there was, of course, the possibility of Wolverhampton in England. But I think that there was not an agreement in terms of transfer fee. This season, with the season that he had, I believe that he's going to be called up for the Euro. I believe that it's going to be really, really difficult to keep João Palhinha, for example. I think it's going to be also hard to keep Nuno Mendes. There are some reports saying that he could leave to Manchester City. Left back, it's a player that can be a reference in the position in the next 10 years, for example. And I think it's going to be hard to keep him. It's difficult. And as you said, Portuguese clubs are known for being selling clubs. It's every year it's the same thing. The good players goes abroad to another leagues, to another countries. So with Sporting, I think it's going to happen the same.
David Novo of The Record. Magnificent. Next up, let's head across the border. Alvaro for La Liga.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Entrega para Trippier, Trippier la deja por dentro, Carrasco contra Juan Cruz, Carrasco, Juan Cruz va a buscar el centro. ¡Gol! De Luis Suárez.
Ooh, 1 week to go, title is still undecided, but with about 10 minutes to go last weekend, it looked like Atleti had blown it. Alvaro, 1-0 down to Osasuna.
Yes, absolutely, but they didn't at the end, and it was really beautiful because I think that the beauty of this current La Liga lies in its imperfection, because no team is particularly brilliant. This is definitely not the level in terms of football that La Liga showed from 2014 until 2018, more or less, when Real Madrid, Barcelona and Atletico picked together. But it's fun as well, because you can see that every team is fighting for every inch of the pitch, and Atletico de Madrid managed to get a win that puts them right there. I mean, they just need to better or match what Real Madrid does in the last game against Villarreal to be crowned champions for the first time since 2014. And looking at the big picture, I mean, Atletico de Madrid winning two titles under Simeone, two La Liga titles, could make justice probably to how good they have been over the last 10 years.
Excellent. They are at Valladolid, and Real Madrid have Villarreal, who of course are fighting for a Europa League spot and also have the Europa League final coming up the following Wednesday. And in respect of that, the Liga have actually shifted all of this weekend's fixtures, Alvaro.
Yes, they have. Basically, the games between Atletico and Valladolid and Real Madrid and Villarreal will be played on Saturday late afternoon. At the beginning, or on paper, yesterday on Sunday, Real Madrid and Villarreal were going to play on Sunday. And Villarreal president was complaining a lot about it, because that gave effectively Villarreal only 3 days to prepare the Europa League final. Mm. And the reason that he was given was that La Liga didn't want the Real Madrid-Villarreal game to clash with Eurovision, because Eurovision is happening on Saturday evening. Well, at the end they have found a way. Villarreal-Real Madrid and Atletico Valladolid will be played on Saturday afternoon. Okay. And yeah, what a title race, what a title final as well. Barcelona is out of it, by the way. Yeah. I think that this is big news as well, because for, let's say, 2-3 weeks, it looked like they had the upper hand. But when they lost against Granada 2 weeks ago at home, they blew it completely, and they haven't been able to recover from that. So Atletico de Madrid is a team that they have at times looked like drained. They looked very affected by the fact that in the Champions League they lost against Chelsea, then they didn't manage to beat Real Madrid at home. And, you know, they've been very weak defending their 50-point threshold, what they got at the end of the first half of the season. But all things considered, they have regrouped the energy from somewhere. I think that some players have stepped up to some levels that no one could have imagined, the likes of Marcos Llorente, for example. I said that before, for me, the midfielder of the season in La Liga. Luis Suárez banging almost 20 goals. Yannick Carrasco as well, playing on the left, as well as he was playing 4 or 5 years ago when he was playing for Monaco or for Atletico before he went to China, you know. So I think that Atletico has managed to be there, but the tension has been enormous. I mean, and you can see that in the way Simeone doesn't celebrate, but runs away from the pitch as soon as Atletico wins the game. I think that the tension is there for everyone, but especially for Atletico de Madrid, because at some point it was theirs to lose it more than the rest to win it.
Okay. As you say, Barcelona completely out of it now. Just one win in five games. Defeat this weekend at home to Celta Vigo after Messi had opened up the scoring. Is it too easy to say that Luis Suarez's move, the decision to let him go, take his 19 league goals and the 20 points they've earned for Atleti across to Madrid, is that the difference?
Well, if we can summarize Barcelona's season in a tweet, for example, that would be a very valid line, I would say, James, because it works perfectly. I mean, Barcelona gave away pretty much for free a very good striker to a direct rival. And I think that Arturo Vidal's transfer to Inter also follow a little bit that pattern. But of course, maybe it was a little bit improbable that Barcelona and Inter would meet in the Champions League, but you knew that Luis Suarez and Barcelona were going to meet in the league. And the only thing that would have justified Luis Suarez moving to Atletico would have been either a good transfer fee for Barcelona, cashing more than 25 million, or having a top striker in the squad. But the second striker to Luis Suarez was Martin Braithwaite. So, yeah, it doesn't make any sense. And I think that Barcelona needed to move on from the Suarez time because it's very difficult to play football in the top European level when two of your players, Messi and Suarez, in the past, they didn't defend or they didn't pressurize the opponent. But if you sell Luis Suarez, it's either you do it well or you have a good plan B. And Barcelona didn't have it.
Crikey. All right, well, they're not going to be in the title race, but Real Madrid and Atleti still are. Alvaro, two questions then. One, what bearing could the apparently open secret Zinedine Zidane is leaving Real Madrid at the end of the season, what bearing might that have on this final day of the campaign? That's the first question.
I think that this shouldn't affect the players that much. In fact, okay, when Luis Enrique told Barcelona players that he was leaving, 2 weeks later, Barcelona did the remontada against PSG. I didn't want to get to that point again, but we are always going back in circles. So I think that this could have even an uplifting effect on Real Madrid. It hasn't been confirmed yet, but Zinedine Zidane has said, and he said in the last press conference before the game against Athletic Club, that sometimes it's time to leave. It's probably very likely that Zinedine Zidane is not going to continue at Real Madrid, or he's definitely thinking about his future. And the thing about Zidane, as I always say, I mean, some other people at Real Madrid don't seem to have the key of their future, but Zidane always had it. He left unilaterally because he wanted to in 2006, even though he could have stayed more. He retired as a player, and then he reached the World Cup final. In 2018, he left after the Champions League final when nobody expected that. Then he came back, and now he's probably going to leave again on his own. So he has never been sacked from Real Madrid. This is the big conclusion for me, that this is a man who is always in charge of his own future.
Magnificent stuff. All right, second question. What are Spain's prospects like in Eurovision then on Sunday night? The track from Blas Canto, as you know, Alvaro, is Voy a quedarme. I'm sticking around. I like to translate that as. He's rocking very much a different corner George Michael vibe in the video. He's wearing some white linens and basically crouched on the floor because he's having an emotional moment. I'm not sure if it's quite going to rock the continent. Jules, what kind of competition will the French be offering?
Very good, James. It's called Voila, which is the most cliché name of a song you could ever imagine. Maybe that will get us some points. It's Barbara Pravi, who sounds very Italian to me, who's singing it. It's
all right. Okay, in Italy, James.
In Italy, it's the winners of the Sanremo Music Festival, which Zlatan of course, guest hosted. So it's not Zlatan or Sinisa, who did Vagabondo, didn't they? That was their song.
Sing
it is Maneskin.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Maneskin, who were in X Factor in Italy. They won it with, what, Zitti e Buoni, which is kind of... Shut up and behave, but the chorus is mosh pit ready, yeah. So siamo fuori di testa, ma diversi da loro.
All right,
so
clip that up, social media department. Rafa, what are the Germans on for us?
The Germans have entered a song called "I Don't Feel Hate" by an artist called Jendrik. I really don't care. To bash me, do it with flair and I'll let you be. But don't you dare to get angry when you realize those words just don't hit me. What?
'cause I don't feel hate. Yeah, that I was not expecting that drop.
It got better, no?
I can't wait for a football club in 10 or 15 years' time to announce a collaboration with Jendrik, you know?
Yeah. That's the real question. So this is happening, Alvaro. Sorry, the Eurovision, where's it being held? Nowhere, I presume. Is it doing a pan-European?
Rotterdam?
In Rotterdam, is it? Well, I look forward to seeing how that pans out. Alvaro?
Yeah, one more thing very quickly. Eibar got relegated on Sunday for the first time in 7 years. This is the first time, in fact, that they got relegated ever in Spanish football, because they've been only one time in the Spanish top flight, obviously, and that lasted 7 years. From 2014 until 2017, it's been a dream for a really small municipality, 27,000 inhabitants in total for Eibar, a club that, I think that... They did the switch from the analogical time to the digital times over the last 10, 15 years, playing in the Primera División, improving their structure, getting bigger. And unfortunately for them, this season they were doomed from mid-March onwards. I think that the manager Mendilibar this time wasn't able to get the better of their players, of his players. And yeah, it's a real shame that they got relegated, but it's been a fantastic journey for a team that was never entitled or never looked like they were going to be playing in Primera División, because they are a very small team.
Excellent. All right, well, hopefully they'll be bouncing back nice and soon. Next up, let's round up today's show with a trip to Syria.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
All right, two rounds of action in Italy since our last show midweek. Standout result was Milan's 7-0 battering of Torino. But then this weekend, Milan went and drew 0-0 with hotel lounge beer swillers Cagliari, while Juventus went out and won the Derby d'Italia with Inter, which really puts the cat among the pigeons in terms of that top four race. James, first of all, bizarrest Derby d'Italia in a while.
Yeah, the Varby d'Italia in some respects, because we saw a couple of VAR checks. Gianpaolo Calvarese, the referee, he was the only thing worth talking about, really, because there was very little football that ended up playing. It was all down to his decisions. Three very soft penalties, a soft sending off. I think ruined the game, really. And look, I mean, Juventus played the final 35 minutes with 10 men, because Rodrigo Bentancur was given his marching orders for no apparent reason. And I think once that goal that Calvarese had disallowed, and then basically the VAR said, hang on, you might want to have another look at that 7 minutes from time, and he gives it as a Chiellini on goal, and it's 2-2, you thought, wow, okay, Juventus not going to be in the Champions League next season. And then Cuadrado, who I think has been their most consistent player this season, goes up the other end, wins himself craftily a very soft penalty. At this stage, Ronaldo, the penalty taker, had been taken off, and bizarre comments from Pirlo saying, I think he was happy to be substituted because we were down to 10 men and that would have meant him running around aimlessly. It's a bit of a story actually on Monday morning about Ronaldo as well, in terms of in the neighborhood where Ronaldo lives in Turin, in the death of night, there was a truck on which a number of supercars were being loaded onto it, suggesting that he was moving them somewhere. Is it indicative that he is moving himself at the end of the season, or is this something that he just does every summer as he relocates from Turin, or is he just getting those cars serviced? We'll find out, James. But back to the game. Cuadrado coolly dispatches the winning goal, and all of a sudden, I think that really put the cat amongst the pigeons, as you say, because I don't want to take us back into a hotel, James, but that's what I'm going to do. Florence, 3 years ago, Napoli, who had beaten Juventus at the Allianz Stadium, looked like they were going to win the league for the first time since the days of Maradona. Instead, they collapsed in Florence. They lost 3-0 and the title race was gone. It felt that Napoli might do that again. this time around, chasing Champions League. And instead, they quite gutsily pulled out a 2-0 win there under Gattuso. I think it's 6 wins in 8 games. So they then leapfrog Juventus. And then Milan had the chance to sew up Champions League qualification. All they needed to do was beat Cagliari. I think Cagliari had not taken even a point away to Milan since 1999. And yet that is what they did. And they could have taken more were it not for Gigio Donnarumma pulling off a couple of big saves. So Milan seemed to get very nervy towards the end of that game. I think they'll get even nervier next week when they have to go to Bergamo.
Well, I missed all of that because I'm still back in that hotel in Florence. I don't know why you took me there. But anyway, so the situation, as you point out, 2 places left behind Inter and Atalanta, who have qualified for the Champions League for the 3rd consecutive season. You've got 3 teams separated by 1 point. Napoli and Milan are both on 76 points and Juve a point behind them. And one of that lot is going to miss out. Juve essentially need to win at Bologna on the final weekend and hope that either Milan or Napoli lose. And given Milan's record away at Atalanta, the chances of that are good. By the way, if the 3 teams end up level on points, then it's actually Napoli will miss out because of the Classifica Avulsa, the kind of head-to-head within the mini league. What do you think then? Atalanta taking on Milan, and they've got the Coppa Italia before that on Wednesday with Juventus.
Yeah, exactly. So Atalanta, as you mentioned, I mean, it's a bit of a fairy tale that they qualified for the Champions League once, let alone doing it 3 times in a row. That's transformative, really, for that club's finances, the stability that it's given them. They got to the Coppa Italia final, a couple of years ago? They lost to Lazio. They're back in it again. They've never won it before. And, you know, they've taken 4 points from 6 against Juventus this season. Remember, they beat them in Bergamo on the day the Super League was launched, quite funnily. So this will be the first game that fans will be allowed back in Italy, in Reggio Emilia, the Mappe Stadium where Sassuolo play. And I suppose, you know, Pirlo has a chance to win a second trophy. But throwing forward to the weekend, you know, it'll be interesting to see what this does for the weekend's games. I mean, if Atalanta win the Coppa Italia, will they be pumped up and motivated for the weekend's game against Milan? I think they will, because if you finish second, which is the place that they're in at the moment, it's worth 5 million more than finishing fourth, which would happen to them if they were to lose to Milan, who would leapfrog them. And also they have a chance to break their own record points total. So I think one of the really encouraging things that we saw, and we've seen this in the last decade really in Italy, that teams that are already safe don't really phone it in anymore. They play hard. So I think, yeah, Atalanta already have things to play for. I'm curious about what Napoli get up to against Verona. Verona beat them 3-1 in January, and okay, they've been in free fall since then, but you know, that is a tricky game. I mean, that's a team that has a very good record against the top 6 sides under Ivan Juric. And Juventus have beaten Bologna in Bologna every year for the last 4 years. So so in some respects, I wouldn't be surprised if Juventus were able to get what they need to at least put themselves in a position to qualify on Sunday.
The midweek game with Atalanta, the Coppa Italia final, will that see a final run out for Gigi Buffon, who's leaving again?
I would think so. I mean, he has been their cup goalkeeper. They're actually unbeaten with Buffon in the team so far this season. So, you know, no wonder he feels like if they hadn't dropped points when he wasn't in the team, they would still be champions for a 10th straight year. And he can keep on playing into his 50s and 60s. There was a great video on, I think it was on Instagram or earlier in the week, with that aging technology, which showed him coming out of the training ground at like 75, giving an interview about, you know, how he was going to keep playing for another year, which, you know, he said he's going to take a few weeks to decide what he wants to do. He's had lots of offers. I think Atalanta even made him an offer as well.
Really?
And you know, I would like to see him go down with Parma, bring them back up. But I think Gigi still believes that you know, he's good enough to play for a top side, a team better than PSG, which was his last experience away from Juventus. So.
A little bit of shade there, yeah. Gigi, of course, who debuted at the age of 17 for Parma against Milan back in the day. extraordinary career. Well, that'll be poignant then, Wednesday night, if he does indeed get the field. One of the many goodbyes that, as I mentioned, we're seeing this weekend. They could also feature Pippo Inzaghi's Benevento, who are in a desperate relegation battle. They're 3 points from safety, 3 points behind Torino. It could already be over by Tuesday night, unless Pippo's brother Simone does Pippo a favour and beats Torino with Lazio, which is the kind of one game remaining before the weekend's action. If Lazio do beat Torino, and it is still between Torino and Benevento at the weekend, it's going to be a fascinating final set of fixtures for those two teams because they're facing each other. Oh my goodness, that's going to be huge. Torino coming off two straight defeats, losing, 7-0 and then 4-0 this weekend. Wow.
Yeah, and the ultras had a word with them after the game. This relegation tiebreaker, if you want to call it that, if it comes to that, will take place at the Stadio Grande Torino. And of course, Benevento, they've only won twice in 2021. And one of those wins was in Turin. It came against Juventus. So let's see. And there was some other news as well. I mean, Rafa mentioned how in the Bundesliga about Union Berlin wanting to get into the Conference League. Well, Sassuolo have a chance of getting into the Conference League if they beat Lazio on the final day. Roma are playing Spezia, and of course we all know what happens when Roma plays Spezia. They make six substitutions, they lose games by default. It gives Sassuolo a chance to qualify for Europe for only the second time in their history. And then Di Zerbi will be leaving to go and coach Shakhtar Donetsk.
Right, whose former manager Paolo Fonseca is another goodbye. He had his last home game as Roma manager last weekend. It was a good way to go out as well.
Yeah, particularly given one of the sticks to beat, Paul Paolo has been his record in the quote-unquote big games. And they won the Rome derby 2-0 and deservedly so with goals from, Pedro and Mkhitaryan. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens now. Obviously, Jose Mourinho is watching. He was Y-scouting some of Roma's best young players, Calafiori, because we all know that he'll be promoting and backing the likes of Calafiori and Darbo when he takes charge in the Eternal City in July. So a nice way for Paolo to go out, who's a class act, I'd say.
Excellent. And that's where we'll take our leave of you as well for today's edition of the Totally Euro Football Etc. We will, of course, be back next Tuesday to round up all of the final day drama. That's going to be quite a show. Do make sure you join us for that. For now, many thanks to Julien Alvaro, Rafa and James, a new listener. Have a great week. Catch up with you next time.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.